Okay, some people are missing, right? Fine. Two are missing. Store it in my last time we talked about one extension of A0, which was allowing the relationship between properties of the world, or relationship between fluents, and the kind of properties that we allowed were, first we talked about this language AR, where we just allow propositional theories that relate fluents. And we discussed the key issue there is defining the next state. And in defining the next state, we follow the same principle as before. The principle is that the positive effect must be true. The direct effect, positive or negative, must be true. Okay. Now, and the second, we put them as two conditions. The third one was that there should be minimal change between the state that you started from and the resulting state. And in case of A0, it's very simple, because this has to be true, this was true before, so everything else should remain the same. So it was very simple, but now we have constraints, so we have a relationship between the objects in the world, and so those must be true. So that adds another condition, so that the resulting state must be a valid state, in the sense it must satisfy those propositional formulas, like always, say toss is equivalent to heads or tails, or always alive if and only if not dead. So those conditions must be satisfied in a state. You cannot have a state where you are both alive and dead, true. That's not a valid state. So we have to go from one valid state to another valid state, and at the same time we have to satisfy the direct effect, and we have to have minimal change. So now this definition is not so simple anymore, or satisfying these conditions is not so simple anymore. So what we have to do is we have to basically say, okay, if you are in this state and you do an action, the resulting state is the state which satisfies all the positive things, all the negative, the negative things are false, and which is a valid state, and it is as close to this one as possible. And we define what closeness is and how we can say the closest. Okay, so that's what we did. And after we spent so much time, then we realized that there are kind of examples, and we give an example where which shows that the propositional logic is not necessarily the right logic to express the relationship between objects in the world, or the causal relationship between objects in the world. And the example that we gave was about a suitcase which has two switches, up one and up two, and the condition is that if both of them are up, the suitcase opens is open. So now, if one of them is open and one of them is closed, what happens if you open the other one? And the normal intuition is that if one is open and another is closed, and you open it, then the suitcase should open. But the definition of closeness really doesn't capture it if we represent it as a classical logic, because classical logic allows you to turn around, and the implication can be changed, and so that does not work. So we suggested that we need a new kind of way of writing this, and we need to write some causal, you need to introduce some causal connective. So the one we introduced is saying that the static causal relationship between objects. So we say that P1 to PN statically cause F. That means if this is true, then this must be true. But we don't say anything else. We don't say that, okay, if this is not true, something happens. So it's not. It's just saying that these things cause this to be true. Okay? So when you say cause this to be true, then it's not other way around. So if I say A implies B, A implies B, this is equivalent to not B implies not A. Okay, if I say A causes B, is not equivalent to not B causes not A. Okay? So, and we need this kind of, we put static cause to differentiate between action causing something and the fluent causing something. That's why we use the notion S cause. Okay. And in the world, you'll see, and we are in our seminars, we are seeing actually, and many times you want to capture this kind of relationship. That something causes something, there's a causal thing, it does not go backwards. Okay. And so how do we define, so we go back to the same question, how do we define the transition function, or how do we go from one state to another state? And this definition is, as here, is quite complicated. The idea is as follows. As before, all the effects, positive, negative, had to be true, the direct effects. And it must satisfy this static causal condition. Okay? So now the question remains, okay, it has to satisfy this, and it has to be, it has to satisfy all the positive and negative effects, and it has to satisfy this, and the definition that normally is used does not explicitly say that it has to be the closest. The definition is slightly convoluted, but my intuition is that it should be also, it should satisfy the condition that if you use the definition, then it will also be the closest. And we're going to check if it is true or not. I don't think it's been proven directly in that term. It might be proven hidden somewhere, but not explicitly. I don't think it's been proven. So we'll check that. But in the meantime, we'll use this definition, and let me go over it again. It's kind of complicated. So make it okay. We'll run many examples so this will become clear. So the static causal rules, you understand this, right? It's just a syntax saying if P1 to PN, and these are all literals, so there can be negative things here, where P1 to PN are fluent literals and F is either a fluent literal, or we also allow this symbol which is basically a special symbol saying that this thing will cause inconsistency. It's a symbol of inconsistency. Okay? So interpretation is a consistent set of fluent literals involving all the fluents. So before we were writing sets as, or interpretations as, say, F, G, or we were not writing negative ones. So here we're writing the negative ones. Okay? Now it says a set of fluent literals S is said to be closed with respect to a set of static causal rules R if each static causal rule of the form this kind in R, what we have is if this is true in S, then F must be true in S. Actually, we should not say F belong to S. F belong to S is fine, because now S has both positive and negative. So we can say F belong to S. Okay? So it just says it's closed, and then we have a notion of the consequence. So given a set S and we have a bunch of rules R, the consequence is we keep adding, we want to expand S such that it satisfies all those rules in R, but it doesn't have anything extra. It's not superfluous. No subset of it satisfies all this. Okay, and so that's the consequence. And then this is straightforward. The positive effect is, or the effect here actually, is the set of fluent literals. So that if we have this A causes F if P1 to PN, PK belong to D, and so this is a typo, and if these are true in S, then F must be an effect. So this K should be N. If you have a note, you can make this N. So now, this is what we define the transition function. The transition function is defined as, so this is our S, and we do action A, and we are saying S prime is a valid state, okay? Or S prime is a resulting state if. So now we're saying, okay, let's look at what is the commonality between this. What did not change? Okay, S intersection S prime. This is the thing that did not change. So we take this and say, okay, what are the using this? We want to use the rule and say, okay, what more things we have to add because these things did not change. Plus, did I make something? Sorry. So this, what did not change, plus S intersection S prime. This did not change. Plus the positive effects of, or the union of, the effect of S. Okay. And we take all the consequences of this, and if what we get back is what is the resulting this S prime, then we say that this is a valid next state. Okay. So now, by definition here, it must satisfy. When you do the consequence, it must satisfy. So we can see actually, maybe the result is obvious. So this makes that it must satisfy all the rules in R. Okay. Plus, not only just satisfies, it is minimally changed, right? Because the CN is the least closed thing. So let's actually, the proof might be trivial. Let me see. So this is S. So this is S prime. Okay. So this is the things that did not change. Yeah. And then this S suppose has some effect, and that effect is say something. It's of course a part of S prime. I mean that effect is something like this. So this is S. So let me make a picture. So this green thing is say E A S. Okay. So we have S and we have E of A S. So let's do this. So we have S. And say we have E of A S. Right? So now what we really want? We want that the E A S must be true. So what are the conditions? E A S must be true in the resulting state. Or in S prime, say. E A S must be true, right? S prime must be closed with respect to this R. This R is the set of static causal rules. It must satisfy those conditions, the properties, the connections between the various properties of the world. Because it must satisfy means what is R? R is collection of such things like always this kind of thing. Okay? So it must be satisfied. Plus, the third condition is S prime must be So let me say example 1, 2, 3. S prime must be the closest, or not the closest, as close as possible to, close as possible to S, which is otherwise written that that does not exist another S double prime which satisfy 1 and 2 and which is closer to S than S prime is. So this is the intuition, and the question is how is this captured here? Let's see if we can see how it is captured here. So EAS must be true, S prime must be close with respect to R, and there does not, I mean, this one, of course, satisfies one, satisfies two. This condition satisfies 1 and 2, because EAS must be true. I mean, we have it inside, so EAS must be true. And the condition 2, S prime must be closed with respect to R. Of course, we have defined it. The question is, if it satisfies 3, that is there something else which could be closer, and is there something else which could be closer and satisfy these two conditions? There is something closer, and my guess is, this is my guess, okay, that the way to argue, we have to formally prove it, that there cannot be something closer, because when we are doing these consequences, we are saying you take this and you pick the consequences, those things which satisfy R, and the smallest thing, the smallest set. If you remember the CNR, we are saying is the smallest set, the closure of S is the smallest set. So it's not a proof, but from that perhaps you can argue that there cannot exist something like this. Okay? And this we need to formally prove, not proven. Now going from the other way around also would be, I mean, 1, 2, 1 implies this, so 3 would, so this connecting 3 to this closer would be the tougher part of the proof. Okay, but I guess you see some connections between this. But EAS must be true, this is here. Okay. This side must be closed with respect to R is here, and then we want to say it's minimal, and we are saying, okay, I mean, whatever it is, S and S prime, this is the common thing, this has to, this is there, so whatever the effect of this or whatever the consequence of this must be taken care of somehow. That's the minimum we have to take care of. If something is here, we don't have to worry about its impact on the rules. But if something is here, so that's kind of the where the feeling is, that these things, we need to worry about these parts. This is definitely there, and this is the common thing also there. So we need to worry about that these must be, we need to worry about the consequences of these with respect to R. And they might add some extra stuff, but we want to minimize, we don't want to add too much of extra stuff. So I get a feeling that these two definitions are equivalent. And the, in the proof, maybe somewhere is there. You need to look at the papers I gave you. to see where in the proof that thing is there. But in a sense, this is a much more, this is like a cleaner definition, and the way it should have been presented in the literature is that this is what I want, and I can mathematically say this this way, maybe. Okay? But the status is that this is the definition accepted, so we're going to use this, and but you see the connection, maybe this explains why it is written like that. Again, we want to go from S to S prime, and the intuition is that, okay, S and S prime, whatever is common between S and S prime, that's kind of very important. That's like they are true. And then the E of AS, the positive and negative effect of S, that's the state you started from, that's the action. And you started at S and there is the effect. So those must be true. So now this S intersection S prime and then EAS, these together form the core of it, and then you say, okay, what we are forced to add because of these. And we are forced to add some things because of these, because of this R, but we want to add as little as possible. That's why the C and R is saying add as little as possible as long as you can satisfy R. So now whatever you got, if that is equal to S prime, that's what you think is the possible next state, then that's the, if this condition is satisfied, then that's a viable next state. Okay? So, I mean, that this looks arcane, but I guess you can understand the role of each of these, right? This is the effect of S, it must be true. Okay? And then between S and S prime, if there's something common, then, I mean, there is before and after. So those are the, these two parts are the main thing. Then now question is, what do they force? They force something because of R. They force some new things to be true. So you add those, but you don't want to add anything that is not forced. So that's what the CN says, that is the closure of S with respect to R is the smallest set that contains S and that is closed with respect to R. Okay? Yes. Is CNR of S a complete, is a complete interpretation? Not necessarily. Yeah. That's why we have this note at the end saying, and S prime is an interpretation. Okay, has to be it. Whatever is. No, because we have S prime equal to that. So you are not going to add anything. If they, you don't match it, if it is not an interpretation, then not. It's not necessarily complete, but the definition is, unless it is, if it's not a complete, then it's not going to be a next state. Every state is complete. Okay. I think proving these two would make life much simpler. Then you can just deal with this and use this as a method. So. Okay, so we'll do some examples which will make this more clear. So let's do this flip and these things, okay? And what am I going to do is, I'm going to hide it. So let's work on this, sorry. Okay, so you only see part of it, right? So let's see if we get this S prime just satisfies this condition or not. So you get an idea of what all this is. Okay, so open your notebook and start working on this. So we have S, we have S prime, we have this is the R, this static causes, this is the R, this is the only thing that is R, this is our D, this is O. Okay, so let's see what happens to the next state and see if means you need some drill, all of these we need to drill you so that you understand this process. Okay? So we're trying to find out if S is this one and you do the axon split 2, what happens? So we have up 1, not up 2, not open. So this is our S and we do flip 2, and S prime is question mark. Is this S prime equal to here S prime is up 1 and up 2 open. 1, up 2, open. Does this satisfy this condition? So S intersects on S prime is what? Here? Up 1, right? And EAS flip 2, the effect of flip 2 up 2. So it's basically, I mean, this plus is union. So union up 2. So now we need to do is consequence R of this set up 1 and up 2. And the consequence R is that it says if you have up 1 and up 2, then you must have open. Right? So you have to add up 1, I mean open to it, and you don't have to add anything else. And this is basically S prime. So it is indeed an X state. So this one was, I mean, this is there. So let's look at this one and see why this does not work. So let's look at S double prime. So S double prime, the one which we had before was, so this one makes not up 1, not up 2, and not open. Right? Not up 1 and up 2, sorry. And not open. Yeah, same axon, flip 2. So this is double prime. So the double prime is now up 1, not up 2, right? What is common between them? Up 1, no. Not up to not open. Not open. Up to. Right? So not open union up to. So the closure of this CNR of not open and up to. So this is equal to don't look at the answer.
Yeah.
No, work
no,
on
no,
it.
No.
Before?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, just work on it. Perfect. So working through the examples, you get a better understanding of this notion. So what happens here is not open and up to, the consequences really doesn't add anything. If we had, instead of static causal law, if we had implications, then you would have actually not open and up to would actually give you not up one, if you had implications, and that's where the problem is. But now you don't go backwards. It doesn't allow you to go backwards. And that's why this is equal to simply the same, not open and up to. And if you take this, and this is of course not equal to this. So these two are not equal. So therefore, S double prime is not a resulting state. Okay? The reason we add not op 1 is that without having not op 1 we still get this, and this is closer to what we started from. So there is basically nothing forces us to add, we should not add anything that is not forced, and nothing forces us to add not op 1. Okay. Now there is another point which was recognized long time back, much before, like not last 10 years back but 25 years back, is that when we are doing this axons and change, and we're trying to say I am in this state, and if I do an axon, what is the next state? So there are direct effects of an axon, and then there are indirect effects. So the direct effect in the first case is by doing flip two, the direct effect is op two. Now, because we have not open and op one and op two. So this is what we had. So this is op 1 and not op 2. So when you do this flip 2, the direct effect is op 1 and op 2 both become 2. Now there is a indirect effect or a ramification of having op 2. The ramification, that's the word used, that the suitcase now opens. So in other words, axons have effect, and then there is some direct effect, and then there's some ramification. Okay? Now there is a very interesting issue was discussed long time back, that certain kind of, because of these properties or connections between the objects in the world, you can have ramifications. But there are examples where instead of ramification, actually what you have is it prevents you from making certain action, it prevents you from executing that action. You just cannot execute that action. That is, it makes the action not executable. And that's kind of strange. So the example as I gave you is that for example, you cannot be married to by law, you cannot be married to two people. So if you're married to one person, okay, you cannot marry another person, because that would basically disqualify. It's disqualified by this property that you cannot be married to two persons. So you're not explicitly saying when I cannot marry or not marry. You're just saying a general connection that a person cannot be married to two people. And if you are married to one person, then marrying another person, that action is disqualified now. Because if you do that, it will violate the condition that you cannot be married to two persons. So in other words, because of these static causal laws, and we'll see examples, sometimes you would have ramifications or indirect effect, and sometimes you will add a qualification and you cannot execute that action. So in the literature they are called like qualification problem and ramification problem. Some 20 years back they used to call that way. I mean, now we know exactly how to deal with it, but at that time people had just examples like this, and they were wondering how do we capture it, and they were having a hard time capturing it because they were using propositional logic, which does not allow to distinguish these two very well. So if you look at ramification problem, qualification problem, you'll find papers on this in the AI journal, people talking about this distinction in terms of examples. Okay, we'll do some more examples. Okay, so this example shows that sometimes you can have, means unlike the example I showed with propositional logic where I said toss implies or if and only if head or x or tail. So it's clear that if you tossed, means there's a disjunction. Now we don't have to have explicit disjunction to have non-determinism. So here there's an example where it says that you have, if you have F and G, then it statically causes knot edge. Okay, so it says F and G statically causes knot edge, and F and H statically causes knot G. And suppose initially you have knot F and G and H, and there is an action which will make F true. So you can say make F. Okay? So you can see that, okay, if F is true now, if F and G forces it not H, F and H forces it not G. Of course you cannot have G and not G, H and not H, only you can have one. So what ends up happening is, because if you do this action, you can either get not F, G, not H, or you may get to the state, it's kind of non-determinism, not F, not G, H. Huh? Oh, sorry, F, yeah, not. Yeah, F. So you get this F, and if you follow for first one, then you get not H. If you follow second one, you get not G. And one of them happens. So it's, now you have to verify this. So this works. So this is S, and so this is S prime, and this is S double prime, and let's work through it to see that this indeed are possible next states. Okay. The formula was that what we want is to show that S prime is equal to consequences of R S intersection S prime union EAS. Right? We need to check this. Okay? So we can try. S is our this, so S intersection S double prime, S prime is G, right? And EAS is makes F true, right? And GF, the consequences become GF and not H, right? Which is equal to S prime. So this one is indeed correct. Then if we take this S double prime, then intersection between this and this, the intersection is H, and then this is F, and H and F forces you to have not G, so not G, F and H, and this is equal to S double prime, so indeed these two are the possible next states. And now you wonder, okay, means how do I, means it doesn't seem like very, how do I do this? Means if I told you, and that's why this is NP complete, in sense, if I told you this, you can verify it, right? If you have to, I'll tell you, give you this and this and say, find me next one. How do you do that? Because it kind of, this 6-point notation assumes that you know it. So the simple way to do it is you have to try all possible interpretations one by one, and that's exponential. So this is a typical case of actually it's later proven NP complete, just finding this next state. It surely belongs to NP, because If you guess, then testing is polynomial, and then you have to prove that it's NP complete. So here, unlike in A0, the point to note, in A0, going to the next state was polynomial time. All you have to do is positive effect, negative effect, right? We did that. Add the positive, take the negative out, that's it, next state. So here, even going to the next state, it gets complicated. In general, there are specific cases if you, so what you could do, which often happens, is that many of the times, this R, or the collection of static causal laws, they do not have cycles in them. So you can go step by step and you can do all these things in polynomial time. These consequences can be calculated, the whole thing can be calculated much more easily. If you, the R itself does not have cycles in them. If you have cycles, then it's all better off. And of course this one, it has cycles. Because it's not H and so the connection between G and H, there's cycles in the causal connection between G and H. And G, if we put the G and not G together. Okay. Oh yeah, the point I was trying to make. So how do you do this? The next state, and here. You can write a logic program, which we did not discuss in this class, which would actually compute the S, given S, it will compute the S prime nicely. Okay, and this is part of it. I did it in 94, 95, and also the guy who developed this causal, static causal, he also did independently around the same time, actually a little after I did on the same thing. So you can compute this in using logic programs nicely. Although, I mean, I cover logic programs in my AI class in detail. That's why in this class I don't cover it, because I don't want to repeat the same material. But I can quickly tell you a 10-minute introduction of logic programs, so that if you get interested, then you can use it. Okay, from the 10-15 minutes introduction of simple logic programs. Logic programs are very tuned to this. Instead of implications, they have, I mean, it comes from prologue, so you can write something like this thing, A, F, B, C, like that. Okay? And again, it means that if B and C is true, then A must be true. Not the other way around, means there is no not A that can kind. And there is one more operator you need to know. So I can write something like say A if B and say not C. And this not is different from classical not. This is saying A is true, B is true, and I cannot prove C. Or I can assume safely that not C is true. So I can give you an example. Say if I say A if not B, then the meaning of this is A. Okay? But if I add, say, if I say A if not B, and then I add B, then the meaning of this is just B, because this B prevents this A from becoming true. So logic programs are very useful actually to do reasoning about actions. And so suppose I have something like say A causes F if P1 to Pn. Okay? So what I can write is say I want to talk about a time t and time t plus 1. So I can say hold F in t plus 1 if holds P1, I can write it more simply.
put it more simply, I can just say f t plus 1 if p1t pnt and say occurs, or just say action A t. Okay. You're saying if these things are true and action A occurs, then f becomes true in t plus 1. This part is easy. The part which is harder is the inertia part. Actually, it's more interesting here. So I can say something like, if ft plus 1, if ft, okay? If it is 2 in t, it becomes 2 plus 1, unless it is somehow abnormal. Okay? Unless somehow abnormal. There are many ways to do it. Unless it's somehow, this f is abnormal in time t. And when can f become abnormal? F can become abnormal exactly when these conditions are true. So I can say abnormal ft if p1t to pnt and action t. Whenever, basically saying whenever an action will have an impact on f, positive or negative, it makes it abnormal. And what does abnormal do? Abnormal prevents it from going from t to t plus 1. Think of this. So what we're doing is whenever an action causes something, so we're saying if the conditions are true, action occurs, then f will be at t plus 1. So that is straightforward. And then we're saying that of course, anytime an action occurs and this condition is true, it makes f abnormal with respect to the Newton's law of inertia or the inertia rule. That inertia is that everything remains the same unless somebody changes it, right? And this is the inertia rule, saying if it is true in t and it's not abnormal, made abnormal, then it remains true in t plus 1. So this is, at a simple syntax level, it's also NP-complete, so has similar power as, say, propositional logic to capture things if you fix a particular syntax. Particular aspect of it. Now, what this allows you is, so now if I have the static causal law, right? The static causal law is saying F1 to Fn, whatever the static causal law, P1 to Pn causes F, P1 to Pn causes F, right? So all you had to do was to say that, okay, if F of t is true, if P1 to P and T is true. And so just adding this and running the logic program would work. So there's the point I'm trying to say is we in this class we dealt with more with propositional logic. The reason being that we cover this other logic program, which are actually, I think, more useful, especially when you get to static causal laws, because there's a one-to-one correspondence, which are more useful. It's just that I did not want to repeat the same thing that we do several months in the other class. So if you were interested in the project related this, then I can give you the material. It's actually part of a chapter in the book, in my other book, which is published where this appears. Okay, but I just gave you a brief thing about how this is done. Is, I mean, there's a very nice correspondence between static causality and logic program, this condition thing. If this is true, then this is true. There's no backwards. If this is not, doesn't mean that if this is false, then one of this becomes false, unlike classical logic. So it's very much, so that it basically has, so that's why it just maps very directly. And then there are systems like propositional solvers. So there are systems like there are two main systems of several. The ones I use is called S models, which you can feed this and you can get the models out of it. Okay. And similar to the one we did the planning with propositional logic, similarly you can do here. You can do planning with this logic. You write the similar kind of rule, and it's actually much simpler here. Comparatively much simpler, because what happens is when you're doing the propositional theory, it gets crowded because you're doing this if and only if. So it was quite crowded. While here, it is very simple. The if and only if is taken care of in a nice way. So the theory looks much simpler than the propositional theory. Because if you remember, the propositional theory was quite horrendous. I can go there and show you again to remind you. So you can remember the propositional theory is right here. This is way more complicated than what we're doing here, right? I mean, writing something like this, every line is simple and more understandable. Here, what we're doing is we're putting everything together. You can compare this here. Everything is, all we have is two sentences. Whenever you have an action, A causes F is P1 to PN, then we write that, okay, P1 to PN are true in time T, and action A happens, then F is true in T plus 1, right? And then we're saying, okay, if it is not abnormal, then T remains same as T plus F remains unchanged. And then I'm saying that the abnormal is very similar to this. So all these three put together is equivalent to something like this. And here, because you're doing one by one, it's much more intuitive. Every line you can understand. Here, you could understand once I explain you, but it's a lot more complicated to see it there. You can see the connection there. I mean, there we are, again, same talking about, instead of T, there is N plus 1. So we are talking about when F will be true in time point N plus 1, and we have this all this if and only if, all these conditions. And that is written here. For each of these kind, A causes F, we just write one by one. So the difference is, in logic programs, you take each of the description like domain, you have this sentence, you translate it into one. You have another such thing, you translate it. So you can independently translating it. While here, you are taking all of them, putting them all together. Or many of them are putting them all together. Yes. No. T plus 1 is going from one state to another. Okay, F is the thing which we are talking about. It is effluent. So, tell me again. We are doing this individual thing, okay? You're saying if I have not T plus 1, then I did not do this action. Does not just do it by itself. So for example, what happens is, if suppose this is false, right? Then this means that so in this case it will be this. So there is this OR thing that comes in. So this OR, let's not have this and this. So in this case, okay. So in certain simple cases, you might get that meaning, but with the complications that we have, with the several complications, we could write something like, say, P if P, or we could write P if when you start writing not. So you don't automatically get that meaning. You may get sometimes, but you don't. The point is, you don't get automatically. In propositional logic, you are forced to get that meaning. So, and the example is more here, is kind of the static causal laws I gave you. The up one and up two causes this. So it's not like if you have not this, then one of them, it's not, they don't cause that one. So when you think of it as causes, so sometimes it works, it might happen, but it's not happens in general. So, I will give think of some more interesting examples. Especially, I mean, when you start having the not explicitly, so if I write something like the P if A, and I add not P to it, so the meaning of this, of the logic program, the meaning here is only just not P. You don't get A out of it. So you don't have that implication. If I just do P of A and not P, this saying P is caused by A, and I have to say not A, not P. So it remains, did I talk about this example? No. Yeah, so it does not make automatically not A to be true. Okay? The example. Let me give you an example that I use in other classes. If you turn on the sprinkler is on, implies that the grass is wet. Okay. Now, if you say I just make the grass wet, I cannot go the other side. I mean, if I make the grass wet, I'm not going to get information about the sprinkler, some other means. But if the grass is not wet, I could conclude actually the sprinkler was not on. So that's not the right example. It does not cause, but can you infer that you did not cause?
Yes,
there are issues more with, I mean, in certain cases you could, but there are issues with, especially when you start doing with knowledge. That if you have assume everything to be actually there are results. So if you assume everything to be true false in the knowledge, then you get something like that, and that actually approach is used for reasoning backwards or abduction. But it's possible that your knowledge is incomplete, And it's not necessary that you have something, you something is either true or false. It's just you do not know. There is a third possibility that you just do not know. And then when you have started having those possibilities, and that's the possibilities where you have this P, not P, and A. It's just that it says not P. I have no idea about A, true or false. I do not know. If I know that A could be either true or false, then from that I will conclude that not A. But it's possible that I don't know anything about A. So you get into a different logic where things are not just true and false. So, but I don't think I made a very clear example. I will think of a more clearer example. Okay, so what I was driving at is that there is another formulation called logic programs or answer set programs, which are more closer to the static causal. They have this if connective. They come from Prolog. I mean, the origin is from Prolog. If connective, which is very similar to the static causal law, and that allows you to do this thing much more easily. And also, I showed you an example going from this description to this logic form, to a logical translation, is a little more simpler here in this language than it is with respect to propositional logic. The reason being, in propositional logic, you are putting all of them together. So it basically says here, if you say, for it, so here it says, for each fluent F, suppose the domain description contains the following. So you are taking all of this together. Okay? While here, I'm just taking one of them and translating it into this, two. Okay, I just do individual translations, and it's much simpler. You take this and translate, while you take the whole bunch and translate, and it gets a little more complicated. So that's point one. That is, the translation is a little more simpler. The point two is, this is for A0. Point two is when you get to this A, when you add the static causal laws to A0, actually you cannot do it in propositional logic, because propositional logic does not allow you to do the distinct, you cannot distinguish between the implication and the static causal. You cannot distinguish, you cannot express static causality in propositional logic by itself. You have to do really a lot more complicated second order kind of minimization to get there. While if you do use logic programs, is something very simple and intuitive. It says this causes F. This means basically whenever this is true, F must be true. Just simply add that to your theory and it takes care of it. No, in the first time you said if you turn on the switch and the light is not broken, you missed that part, right? So if you add that, no, but those are the things. So I think the problem happens. I have to get you better examples. The problem happens when you have incomplete information. Then you cannot do this. And when you have complete information on certain things, then you can do the if and only if stuff. If you remember the class completion, I don't know if you have you must have read from Ju Young, might have taught you about class completion. So that's basically if and only if, except it only works when you do not have, it doesn't work with P, if P kind of things. Okay? And it does not work if you get into incomplete things. Otherwise, the class completion is basically if and only if kind of thing. Okay, some more examples. It's getting slow. So if this is something for people who, actually 1, 2, 3, 4 of you took my classes where I taught this, you could take my next AI class where we cover this in more detail and many other things. Or if you want to do related to a project, I can tell you what to get there. So they're all related, but I cannot teach the same thing in multiple classes. So in these classes, I just go to the propositional logic part. Okay, so we did this one, and we did this one. So this is a nice example. So think again of, I mean, all this killing, we think of turkeys, and this is the examples that are there. So if you kill a turkey, it's no longer alive. If you make it walk, it walks. And if it's not alive, then of course it cannot walk. Right? So what happens if a turkey is alive and walking, S1, and then you kill it? So it's kind of interesting. So if alive and walking and you kill it, so it becomes this not alive, and because of this not alive, statically causes not walking, so you indirectly get that it's not alive and not walking. Okay? Now, so that part is the ramification part. The interesting part is the other one, is that suppose the turkey is not alive and not walking. Now, say you want to make it walk, you just make it walk, do the action make walk. Then what will happen? If you make walk, then the turkey will start walking. But walking can only be, now if it is walking, but not alive causes not walking. So there's a contradiction. So what this basically saying is that if the turkey is not alive and not walking, you cannot make it walk. So the condition that, and nowhere we said anything about that when you can do this action or not. So this is where the qualification, these constraints that not alive makes the turkey not, cannot walk, forces you to say that if something is not alive and not walking, you cannot make it walk. Because the resulting state, there is no resulting state. So this is a very nice example. This was by Lin also, Fang Zhen. I think it's Fang Zhen and writer, Lin and writer's paper, is that sewing. The same constraint, so the same constraint, one constraint, so this is different from my other example, the same constraint can, under some state, cause extra effect, like ramification. And under certain other conditions, they add a qualification to the action of make walk. They just prevent make walk from happening. So in other words, there's a state, if I want to do this action, because of these connections, sometimes I will get some additional effect beyond what is this action will do. Beyond the action of kill, not alive, there is an additional effect of it will not work. But some other time, the effect is because of the condition, I cannot just do this action. I cannot make a turkey walk if it's not alive. So the first one is, so we can see what happens. So the new one is the second one. So let's do this so you get a feeling for this. And in logic, means what will happen is you will not get a next state. So the initial state is, in the second case, not alive and not walking. And we want to say what happens if we make it walk. Possibilities say this is S prime, so this is S. We make it walk, then we definitely want it to have walking. right? Definitely means you make it walk. The effect, direct effect is has to have walking. And there are two possibilities. Either the talkie is not alive or alive. No, two possibilities. Not alive, or as the old prime is walking and alive. And basically you will try to see that both S prime and S double prime do not satisfy the condition that we are discussing. What happens in case of S double S prime? S intersection S prime is equal to walking not alive, so not alive. And the direct effect EAS is equal to union. The direct effect of make walk is walk. Okay? And when you do the union of this, so you have not alive and walk. And when you do the consequence of this, CNR, so by not alive and walk, because you have not alive, it causes not walk. So this you get not alive, not walk, and walk, which is an inconsistent state. So, and you cannot get to an inconsistent state. So this is definitely not equal to S, and this is not equal to S prime anyway. So, so this is not a resulting state. And similarly, if you do the S intersection S double prime, you get a walking is empty, and effect of A, so the action effect of this is walk. So if you have walk, and if you now do the consequences of this, CNR of walk, and it just says, and this is actually interesting. So the consequences of walk is, okay, and this is your example, you can see here that not alive will cause not walking, okay, and but if you, you make somehow walk, push the turkey to walk, somehow it's not going to become alive. You can make it walk, but it's no longer going to be alive. That's something you cannot do. So the result of this is that there is no resulting state. That means you cannot do this action. Okay. So CNR walk is basically, if you do the consequences, it's just walk, and this is not equal to S double prime, nor it is a interpretation, nor it is a complete state. So neither of these is possible. So that means basically in this state, if you do this action, you don't go to any resultant state. That means you cannot do this action. There is no resulting state. That means you cannot do this action. And so that's what is worked out here. So these examples are completely worked out. If you're following, if there are no typos, then you should get all the things there. There is one more slide after this. Another way to say it is, probably this one we can do next time a little bit. If you want to say, like, there's some action make F and it causes F, and the result of this F is not G, ramification, then you say this way. And so this one is useful if you want to say that, say, move from A to B, then causes you to be at B. And this one say, if you are at B, then you cannot be at A. You can only be at one location. So if you are initially at A and you move to B, then your resulting state is at B and no longer at A. And the same thing if you want to say, instead of move, you want to change it to marry, then you have a way to say it differently here. You can say, I cannot be married to A and B, that is inconsistent. That causes inconsistency. So now, if you are already married to, say, B, and you try to marry to A, there is no resulting state. You cannot marry to A. So if you are at A and you move to B, you are at B and you are no longer at A. But if you are married to A and you marry B, you are prevented from doing that. And these two are written differently here. In propositional logic, they would be written the same way. A and B imply you cannot have those true. And as a result, you cannot distinguish between these two cases. This is one other example of why it's better to have a such causality relation rather than simple implication. So think of this example and try to plug in F and G as marry A, marry B, move at A and at B, or married to A, married to B. So, and you can see the difference. So we have F and G. So think of these two examples, at A, at B, and the action is, say, move to B. And you can say married to A, married to B, and the action is, say, marry B. And say initial state is at A, and initial state is married to A. So in this case, when you move to B, you will be at B. In this case, when you marry B, you will not be able to do it. And the implication in this, if you write this in logic, in propositional logic, there is only one way you can write. You can write at A and at B is false, not, or at A implies not at B, at B implies not at A. So there's only one way you can write. They're logically equivalent, and marry same thing, and thus you cannot distinguish between them. While here you have a way to specify differently, and it makes sense. It says that if you are at B, then it causes you to be not at A, and this one says that you cannot be married to two persons. That causes inconsistency. It does not say that if you are married to A, it causes you to be not married to B. There are no causal relation between marrying A, being married to A and B. It does not cause. Okay, so you can see the cause thing here, right? If I am at B, it causes me to be not at A if A is something different. I just cannot. But if I am married to B, it does not cause me to automatically not marry to A. It's different thing. I just cannot be married to two people. So that was the example, and we can talk a little bit about it and move on from here. So Pat was saying that it's better that you talk when he comes back next Thursday, right? He likes you to listen, likes to listen to you guys. So good. Okay, so that's where we stop today, and it's Thursday. So have a good weekend. We'll see you next week. You can borrow the book and make copies of some of those pages.
Okay, which book would it? I'm not sure.
Okay, come, if you come by, I can tell you.
Okay, and then that's the second question. Because of your office hour is the time where when I have a different
a class.
So
okay.
So I cannot cancel. Like, is it possible for us to find out time because I'm not
sure.
Have an idea of the project?
Sure, sure.
When do you think is it possible this week, tomorrow sometime?
Tomorrow. I'm not sure if I but tomorrow
you can give me an answer later if you want
yeah.
To make sure.
Okay. Just send me some ideas first.
Okay, sure.
Then
sure.
You can
no
some of the things you can do by email.
Okay.
But usually your best time is if not if you cannot make Thursday, Wednesday is better.
Okay.
Tomorrow I'm not sure. If I was
okay.
There I would be fine.
Okay.
I mean, anytime I'm there is fine.
Okay. So I'll send you an
I'm usually in the afternoon.
Okay.
But some days I'm not, so
Tuesday and Thursday, things are better, right?
No, but we have classes, right?
Yeah.
You have class.
Yeah, I have class on
so, but Monday, Wednesday,
okay.
Friday are fine if
okay.
I'm there.
Okay, I'll send them there.
Okay. No, okay.
I come straight from work and sometimes I'm
late. No problem. Yeah, the traffic came. I mean, so tell me some of your ideas and then I will go from there.
Maybe can I do something like say, path planning or something like that, or like the example that you gave in class, something like say, moving around obstacles or something like that. So I mean, whether the movement is allowed or not, or reaching a path, or would it be a bit...
Are you taking planning class, anything?
No, but I intend to do that next semester, but right now I haven't taken any, because this is my first semester.
Okay. No, that does not fit in quite well, because you're not very clear what you want. What you might want to do is go to the class website, go to the 2004, I have a lot of pointers. Just read the abstract, don't read the papers.
Okay.
See if you get some ideas. Read just the abstract, like small, small things. See if there's something interesting.
When can I discuss, like if I have some ideas, when can I discuss it with you?
Send me email anytime, email is easier. But I'm there after most afternoon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I think I have two choices. The first one is some theory. I like some theory. For example, I read some theory and present it.
No, present is not enough.
A CSP encoding using the SAS plus language instead of CDDL.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is SAS?
SAS is a language to establish to model the system.
Whose language is SAS? You can send me the paper on SAS, I can look. Okay, send me the SAS paper then I will look and tell you how it is useful. Okay.
And it's really to summarize what is the variable and constraint.
No. The question is what you want to do. If you are doing some research, I don't think you want to do that research and put it here as your class project. So it has to be something related to it, but different.
Yeah.
Different.
I understand that it must be, then I have to make a connection with the
something related to, yeah, something new, something different from what you're doing for your class, for your research. Something different from what you're doing for your research. Maybe related, but not exactly something doing for your research.
But for example, if I want to do about theories,
send me SAS, I can find something related to what you are doing. Send me the paper by SAS.
Okay.
Okay? We can do something related to what you are doing, but not exactly.
Yeah.
So send me SAS and I'll tell you.